All right, well, my job is to introduce you to the new series, The Buddha in the Pali Canon. And Ratnakosha says I'm going to give a talk. Actually, that's not quite true. I'm going to give a talkette. And I'm going to introduce you to what's happening. And also, I'm going to do something very, very unusual for me, which I'll come to in a minute. Very, very unusual. It's never happened before. So, some of you who've been around for a few years might have spotted that we've had this thing before. In fact, not even that long ago. I think maybe even a couple of years ago or something like that. And that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter, I don't think, anyway. Because, well, this is another time, isn't it? This is another time. We're different. The Dharma's different. This will be a slightly different series from the last time. And things are never exactly the same, are they? So I don't think it matters from that point of view. Also, it doesn't matter because of repetition. One of the things that the Buddha taught was that we need to repeat things over and over and over and over again all our lives, because they don't go in, do they, straight away. Very often these teachings, they take time to percolate into our consciousness. And it's the same with the series, a Buddhist series. Yeah, you need to repeat the themes over and over again because, yeah, they're always relevant. We learn a little bit more each time. So my task is to set the context and introduce the Buddha in the Pali Canon. And, well, that's what I'm going to do now. But as I said, I'm also going to do something quite unusual. Those of you who came to my last talk might remember that I became Buddhist when I was 14, which was very unusual where I came from. I grew up in Cumbria in the Lake District in the 1970s, and when I was 14 I realised I was a Buddhist. And I'm 60 now, so it must have been true. My mother at the time said it was a phase that I was going through. I heard her saying this to a neighbour over a garden fence, but she was wrong. But also, around about that time, I was at school, I was a schoolboy, and I got a particular school report in relation to my English lessons. I think it's fair to say I wasn't the brightest scholar in Britain at the time. I was in the C set for everything. In fact, I think C would be quite good for me, really, at the time. I was much more interested in playing and painting, actually, painting and drawing, which, by the way, I got the art prize every year at school for painting and drawing. But everything else wasn't very good. I remember the school report. I still remember the exact words about my English. It said, "Richard needs to learn the art of writing essays properly and talking less." That's what it said, and I was a bit hurt by that, actually. But I just never really got the knack of writing essays properly. You know, I can speak English, here I am, but I never really got the knack of composition, getting it all together, all that kind of stuff. And I don't actually know how I managed to pass my English O level, but I did. I scraped through. But I don't recall ever writing an essay. Not a proper one. I might have cribbed one from my brother or something like that. But I don't ever remember writing an essay. I don't think I ever did. I don't know how I passed. Anyway, I have written one this evening. I think it's actually the first essay I've ever written. Who says that over 60s can't kind of do new things? So yeah, I've written a proper essay. And it's just a short one. Just a short one about the Pali Canon. And about the context of the Pali Canon for the Buddha. Because we know quite a lot about the Buddha. But what we often don't know is what India was like in that time. And I think it's very important to really enter into Buddha in the Pali Canon. You really need to get the context for what it was really like. It really was very, very different from how we live our lives today. So, It's not really at all. I'm going to read you out a proper written essay that I've written. So I'd like you to sort of settle back, make yourself comfortable, relax. If you want to close your eyes, you can. But let your imagination soar. Just enter into this world if you want to. Because the more you're able to do that, the more you can get in touch with the Buddha of the Pali Canon. So here's my proper first ever essay. Are you ready? Here we go. In the 6th century of the Common Era, Solon promulgated his famous laws in ancient Greece. Nebuchadnezzar's reign marked the height of Babylonian civilization. Confucius taught his Analects in China, and Siddhartha Gautama, later the Buddha, was born on the plains of India, now southern Nepal. He was the son and heir of the Shakya clan. There was general well-being and prosperity in the land, an India very different from today, without the extremes of wealth and poverty, squalor and starvation that we have now. In the Buddha's day, it was a land of well-balanced activity, containing a society with no extremes of rich and poor, with life based on a well-to-do farming class. There were slaves, but they were members of the household, and nothing like the black slaves of Africa or the slaves of the Roman Empire. There was no hard and fast line between the classes, which then couldn't really be called castes. The Brahmins claimed to have the sacred wisdom and the monopoly of sacrificial rites. They were respected, but they lived ordinary lives with everyone else. The really respected ones were the sadhus, the holy men with matted hair, half naked and with long beards, who lived in the forest or wandered from village to village. They expounded their particular doctrines from the Vedic scriptures. Religion was taken very seriously and everyone participated. That said, it was an age of religious tolerance, and Gautama represented the high watermark of a very high tide of religious endeavour. The family was the basis of the social organisation in every class. Marriages were arranged by parents for their teenaged children. Wives went to their husbands' homes upon marriage. Couples were expected to bear children. In the Raja's palace, the courtesan was a professional companion and occupied a respectable status at court. There appears to have been no obsession with sex, such as we have today. Allusions to sex in the Pali Canon are often rather crude. However, it obviously didn't dominate people's minds at that time. Beautiful legends and stories gathered around the birth, boyhood, and young manhood of Gautama. They tell us how, despite his happy and protected life in the palace, he discovered that old age, sickness and death are universal. They tell us how, at the age of 29, he left his home, his wife and newborn son. He went away alone into the forest to find the way to end people's suffering and thereby solve the riddle of life. During the 6 years that followed, he experimented with self-torture and starvation, without finding an answer. Then he took food and sat in meditation in what's believed to be the full moon day of May, or Wesak. That night he found the answer and became the Buddha, an awakened one or enlightened one. There then followed 45 years of active teaching life. He wandered the highways and byways of northern India, showing men and women how to find the ending of suffering and the rounds of samsara, and find the same imperturbable joy that he had found nirvana. The early life of Gotama, before he became the Buddha, is probably partly legendary and symbolic. The Buddha that we encounter in the Pali Canon is the Buddha in his ministerial life, his life of teaching to his many thousands of disciples. This took place in a particular setting. His teachings were not given to learned philosophers in abstract discourses, but to suffering human beings with problems that were essentially the same as our own. The earliest records of the Buddha's words were memorized and collected by monks, that is, celibate men who lived a disciplined but rough life out in the open jungle. We owe a huge debt to these monks. For us 21st century folk, we can see that these monks had a particular slant on how they recorded events. Firstly, they tended to belittle the householder. And secondly, they tended to see women as second-class citizens. It was a traditional society, and with regards to women, these views are still not uncommon in rural India today. These early recorders of the Buddha's teachings were sincere and ardent practitioners, but they operated in the times they were in, so we must make allowances for that. Sadly, there were few women's rights in those days. The Buddha, like most great spiritual teachers, took for granted the cosmology accepted by the people around him. Or more correctly, he expounded the Dharma, the moral and spiritual law, with their own terminology. This terminology related to the suprasensual world, a world with devas, angel-type figures, praetors, hungry ghosts, Brahma the creator, its heavens and hells, and above all, the certainty of rebirth. All of these things may be said to form part of Buddhism, but none of them are the essential teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha's core teachings of conditioned co-production, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, can be applied just as well to a modern Western cosmology with its scientific and psychological terminology. This terminology relates today to a suprasensual world of atomic particles and subconscious forces. This is the context in which the Buddha's teachings are taught today in the modern world. In the Buddha's day, the Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path were taught in the context of Indian Vedic cosmology and the rural farming community. Whether we are thinking of the Buddha's own times, the time that is recorded in the Pali Canon, or we are thinking of our practice of the Dharma in the modern world, we should always bear one essential point in mind. The Buddha was not interested in the existence or non-existence of a supreme being or any other abstract proposition. He was only interested in the path, the practical path, by which unsatisfactoriness or dukkha may be ended and enlightenment may be gained for all beings, both now and in the future. So that's it, that's my little lesson. I finally got there, I finally wrote an essay. Yeah, I just wanted to give you a bit of a background really to what it was like. I mean, it was a very, very different world that the Buddha was operating in. Like, for instance, we have clocks and we run to time and we instantly communicate with each other and we're all very hassled. And it really wasn't like that back then. Everything was connected with the seasons and the rise and fall of the sun. People didn't rush and hurry hardly at all. They just did things in a natural kind of rhythm. There was dukkha there, of course. There were all sorts of problems with ordinary society, but there was a rhythm to life. It was quite different. There were no notions such as democracy. It was a clear hierarchy. As I've said, unfortunately, it was a bit of a patriarchy in the society. That's how it was. So they were very, very different times from what we're living in. But I think what was remarkable about it was the times was the Buddha gave a teaching which is just as applicable to our time, or in fact any other, you could say, as ancient India at that time. The monks, nuns and lay people on the Gangetic plain of the 6th century. So in this series, we'll be exploring a few of the many, many stories that are contained in what we call the Pali Canon. So these stories emerge out of that kind of context and background. And so I thought I'd just tell you a little bit about what's actually coming up. I've written it all down somewhere here. Hopefully you can see it. Oops. It's quite a little bit like magic, doesn't it? It's a sort of Tom and Cooper moment, isn't it? So, next week I'll give us a talk, and I'll actually give you a proper talk next week on the Mahir Sutta. So, that's an important sutta from the Udana, one of the early sections of the Pali Canon, and that's all about a young disciple of the Buddha's who doesn't really want to do what the Buddha's asking him to do, and we get to see what actually happens to him as a result of that. So that's next week. The following week we've got a special puja which has been compiled by Rat Gosha. Apparently he's compiled it from three different pujas. So we're going to perform that. So it's a special Buddha Puja. Nick, that's the week after on the 21st. Then it's Ratnagosha again, who's going to talk to us about the Chanki Sutta. It's not Kanki, it's as it's written, it's actually Chanki. And in this particular sutta, a young Brahmin questions the Buddha and receives a teaching about truth and the fundamentals of faith. So it's not to be missed. And then on June 4th, I'm going to give us a pilgrimage slideshow. I don't know how I'm going to do that, the technicalities, but I'm sure it can be achieved, of a pilgrimage really showing you the kind of places that a lot of these stories were set in. And I've been around all these places many times, and they haven't really changed. Some of them, apart from telegraph poles, a few telegraph poles, you know, they're unchanged, some of those areas, from the time of the Buddha. So that's something to look forward to, I hope. And then Vidyasaki is going to give us Dhammadina's story, tell the story of Dhammadina, who was one of the most prominent disciples of the Buddha at the time. A lot of people don't know that. And what was so marvellous was that she is a woman. And that was a really wonderful thing at the time, because there weren't that many women disciples at that time, but later on there were many. But Dhammadina really stands out. So we're going to hear about her story. And then the following week, Ratnagosha is going to tell us about the Ganjanu and Magira's mother, which I know nothing about. That's going to be a complete new one for me. Male and female disciples of the Buddha. And then on the 25th of June, it's me again telling the story of the Badali Sutta. So again, this is another disciple of the Buddha that doesn't really want to play the game. He doesn't want to stick to the rules that the monks are obliged to do in what's called the Vinaya, and we get to hear about what happens to him. So great story there. All these suttas, by the way, they've got lots and lots of teachings for us in our lives. And then that's followed by a special Pali Canon Puja, which I'll lead on July the 2nd. The 9th, there's nothing currently planned for the 9th, but watch this space. And then on the 16th, there's a full moon discourse talk from Ratnagosha.
It's a sutta.
It's a sutta called the Full Moon Discourse, and that's a really important sutta. So we'll be hearing all about what happened there. Then Sangaketu is going to come in and give us stories from the Udana. He's a bit of an expert on the Udana, is Sangaketu, and he's got a great deal of love. Those of you who know Sangaketu know that he can come across a bit like a northern stand-up comedian, and which is not surprising because he sort of used to be one. And so there'll be a lot of fun and humour in all that, as well as some great sutras. And then on the 30th, it's the welcome back to the new order members. So two new ones. So we're going to really pull the stops out and give them a huge welcome, returning from Gokiloka and the Kashvana. Then finally, the final one in the series is myself giving a talk on Esukari Sutta, which is all about caste and class and all that kind of thing. I'm going to be drawing on quite a lot of my own experience of teaching Dharma in India, which I've done for 16 years. And that'll be sobering and uplifting, I think. We're then going to have a short bardo period, in between period, before we start the autumn series. So we're going to have a few couple of classic Sangharakshita talks. So Priyananda's going to give us, on Sangharakshita themes, he's going to give us a talk on mind reactive and creative. And Sangajata is going to speak on the taste of freedom. So not to be missed, definitely not to be missed. And finally, Samamati will be leading a special Bhante celebration evening with poetry, readings, all sorts of things. So that's our current series to look forward to. So good stuff indeed. Very rich fare. So for the time that's left now, what I'm going to do is say a little bit about your handout.
Can I ask a question about the timescale?
About the...
I was wondering whether these dates and themes are going to be sent around by
weekend.
Yes,
they're already on the website.
Yeah, they're already on the website.
So you'll get those.
Yeah.
No, I was wondering whether
you're going to
email around.
Yeah, they'll be sent out.
They do,
yeah, definitely. So I wanted to say something about the Pali Canon. And what I've done is I've drawn you out a little map of the Pali Canon. And just say a little bit about what it is. So the Pali Canon, as we know it, is the standard collection of the scriptures in the Theravada school as preserved in the Pali language. It's the most complete early Buddhist canon. So this is what happened. This is how it was. This is the most complete version. And it's often referred to as the Tripitaka, which means three baskets. And there literally were three baskets, just like in the drawing. After the death of the Buddha, the teachings were memorized and recited. Now, you might think the teachings were memorized, really, sort of hundreds and thousands of... How did they do that? I used to think that. And I can't remember which lecture it is, but Bhante talks about he used to also doubt that as well. But then he met somebody when he was living and teaching in India who was able to memorize word for word the lecture that he'd just given. And not only has that happened to Bhante, it's also happened to me. I had an experience of that as well. I was giving a lecture to about 1,000 people, and I didn't think it was being very well delivered, and that the PA system kept sort of breaking down, as it often does in India. And somebody I met after just heard everywhere, and they memorised the entire thing, were able to recite everything word for word to me back a couple of months later, actually. And in India, it does seem that we've got those kind of people, but also we had those. You could say that almost everybody was like that in the past. But before the age of writing, people had to memorise things. We've kind of lost that function since writing and recording came in. We've lost that ability. But back then they had it off pat. They were very, very good at it. And they made sure, by reciting endlessly, going through the scriptures and reciting huge chunks of it. So that's how the teachings were preserved. We don't know if it's a completely an accurate reflection of what the Buddha actually taught. We assume it was, because the teachings have led people to enlightenment. So the teachings were memorized and recited. The monks couldn't read or write at that time. Probably the Buddha couldn't. Eventually, the teachings were written down hundreds of years after the Buddha died on bamboo strips called palm leaf manuscripts. And they're really quite beautiful. If you kind of have a look on Google and look up the images of palm leaf manuscripts, they're really, really beautiful. Long little strips with the writing on them. And they kind of fanned out a bit like a kind of Chinese fan. And they were just placed in these baskets. And there were three baskets eventually, which formed the Tripitaka, and you've got them there. So you've got the Sutta, which was, this is where most of the stories, well, in fact, all the stories that we're going to be going into in this series come from the Sutta Pitaka. So everything that was memorized and written down about the Buddha, his teaching, his disciples, what happened, it's in the Sutta Pitaka. And there's certain sections there, you'll see, of complete classic texts like the Udana and the Dhammapada. They're all in the Sutta Pitaka. Incredible, really. It's all there. The other basket was the Vinaya, and that was really about how the monks should conduct themselves and behave, because as the Dharma evolved, the Sangha evolved, things kept going wrong. A little bit like our movement, really. Things are constantly going wrong, and in our movements, we have to kind of find new ways of working skillfully based on the principles that the Buddha set down. And that was the case in the time of the Buddha. So eventually the Vinaya was all written down and memorised, but then of course it became its own kind of problem. But that's the code of discipline and morality. And then finally, what have you got? You've got the Amidharma. So that's all about classifications and mental states. So Sangharakshita's book, Know Your Mind, where you can go into understanding your mind through meditation, all that kind of thing, is all based on the Abhidharma Pitaka, Abhidharma basket. So here we are, we've got the Pali Canon. Scholars think that the basis of the Tripitaka was recited orally during the First Council, just after the Buddha's death. Then it's preserved orally for hundreds of years. And finally, King Ashoka, that great promulgator of the Dharma, he actually wrote it. He transmitted the canon to Sri Lanka, where it was finally written down at last, around about the time of the Fourth Buddhist Council. So that was about 454 years after the Buddha's death, it was finally written down. And then it came back to India, and then later on the rest of the world. So even today, and I've had this experience, if you go to Sri Lanka or Burma, the schools there, they'll say to you very clearly, all that you need to make your way to full enlightenment is contained in the Pali Canon. You don't need anything else. And I'm sure that's true. Of course, we do have further developments of Buddhism and schools of Buddhism, Mahayana and Hinayana. But nonetheless, the Pali Canon will get you there if that's what you want to read and reflect upon. So the stories that we're going to be exploring come from this Pali Canon. That's the source. If you bought a set of volumes of the Pali Canon, they take up a sort of reasonable size cabinet, about that kind of size. There's a lot of them, an awful lot more than the scriptures of many other religions. There's a lot of material right there, and that's the basis, those riches. Most of what's written in the Pali Canon is about the Buddha after he gained enlightenment. There is material from his earlier years before he was the Buddha, but most of it is about his ministry and teachings. And there are many, many stories in the Tripitaka about the Buddha. hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different stories and incidents. And we've got the Buddha facing down a bull elephant. We've got the Buddha untangling metaphysical speculation. We've got the Buddha showing his boundless and incredible energy. We've got the Buddha teaching his disciples with infinite wisdom. We've got the Buddha dealing compassionately with a grief-stricken mother with a dead baby. The different qualities of the Buddha are very clearly brought out in the Tripitaka, and they make a good basis for study and for contemplation, reflection on the Dharma. Some of the stories encapsulate beautifully profound teachings of the Buddha. The Buddha lays out what the teaching is in a particular area, a particular time. You can go to that source and find definitive teachings on all sorts of aspects of the Dharma. And also, they very much tell us the nature of the Buddha and what he was like as a person, the kind of guy that he was. And there are stories about his wisdom that demonstrate his wisdom, his reason and clarity, his mysteriousness. The Buddha was often quite a mysterious figure. People didn't really always know quite what he was. His remarkable powers, and also his gentle humour, his practicality, his courage, his fearlessness, and above all, his kindness and compassion. So though the time and place of the Pali Canon is different, these are real stories of humanity as well as spirituality. And a good example of this is the story of Meghia, which I'll be talking about next week, plug. And who is pretty individualistic, actually. He's quite an individualistic character. It goes against the advice of the Buddha. So he's probably a little bit like us, or a little bit like me. I've certainly gone against the advice of my teachers on so many occasions. It usually hasn't worked out. And that's what he did. That's the way that he was. And we get to see what happens to him, how things work out for him. So you can learn very thoroughly from the Pali Canon in terms of the teachings expounded by the Buddha to his disciples in these stories, if you read them. So it's not just about what kind of person he was, which is a teaching in itself, but also he's telling you, he's instructing you in the Pali Canon how to live your Dharma life today. So he's telling you how to develop energy, how to be ethical, how to meditate, how to go deep in meditation, how to worship the Dharma in an effective way, how to develop spiritual friendship. It's all in there. How to develop ethics and live an upright life in the family context. How to gain deep wisdom. It's all there in the Pali scriptures in the Tripitaka. So I hope you will join us for as much as you can of this particular series of the summer season. And we will meet the Buddha of the Pali Canon.